the Agile brand.
Welcome to Season 6 of The Agile Brand, where we discuss marketing technology and customer experience trends, insights, and ideas with enterprise and technology platform leaders. We focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make brands successful, scalable, customer-focused, and sustainable. This is what makes an Agile brand. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advising Fortune 1000 brands on MarTech, marketing operations, and CX, best-selling author and speaker. The Agile Brand Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to teksystems.com. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my latest book, Priority is Action, 7 Principles for Better Strategies, Decisions, and Outcomes, is now available. In it, I give ideas and insights for leaders and teams that need to make meaningful progress on their priorities. After all, our priorities are what we do, not what we say we'd like to do. You can find Priority is Action on Amazon or learn more on my website, gregkilstrom.com. Now let's get on to the show. Netlify recently announced the findings of the State of Web Development, previously known as the Jamstack Community Survey, which is a guide to the trends and strategies shaping the future of web development. Today, we're going to talk about some of the findings in this report, including building agility into the enterprise through a composable approach to an organization's digital presence. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Matt Billman, CEO at Netlify. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about this with you. Why don't we get started, though, with you giving a little background on yourself, as well as a little bit about what Netlify does?
Yeah. So I'm Matt Billman. I'm CEO and co-founder of Netlify, and started Netlify quite a while ago now, really from the insight that we believed that the core architecture of the web was about to change from a world where every single website, a web store or web application was typically built like one big monolithic application where we would bundled together like back-end business logic, the web UI itself, plugins, data access, everything. And we believed that we would fundamentally shift from that to a world where we would decouple the web UI itself and really treat it as its own application with its own team working on it. And the other side of that monolith was split into all these different APIs and services where some might be running in your own data center with your own business logic, but a lot of them are reusable services built by other like Contentful or Twilio or Algolia and so on. So we started Netlify to really focus on like what's the right platform for letting people build these modern web UIs with a decoupled architecture. Launched that back in March 2015. Yeah, and since then, we've onboarded more than 4 million developers to our platform, and we're reaching more than a billion unique visitors to site stores and apps running on Netlify's Edge network every single month. And I've really seen this approach to building for the web that we coined as the Jamstack architecture go from being like a very early adopter phenomenon to really being like the mainstream way of building for the modern web. Now we're sort of really seeing that the next frontier in that, which is all the really large companies out there that has a lot of existing web architecture trying to figure out how do they modernize that? How do they move from like a big monolith to a composable architecture where they can decouple the web experiences and build much faster with much better results for the customers.
Great. Well, yeah. So let's dive in here and get started with our conversation about how a composable approach allows brands to be more nimble and agile in their approaches. And, you know, so I talk with a lot of people on this show, and I work as a consultant and advisor to some fairly large organizations. And, you know, been hearing these terms many terms. You know, you mentioned Jamstack, there's composable, there's mock, there's headless, not all the exact same thing, but you know, all kinds of kind of related to one another in some ways. And, you know, we've certainly talked about these terms on the show as well. So don't necessarily need to get a definition from you per se, but, you know, could you define, you know, what your philosophy is as far as, you know, why are composable approaches something that brands should definitely consider?
I think at the real core of it, like, it all comes down to how important digital experiences have become for companies, right? Like, maybe 10 years ago, if you were picking a bank, it might be because they had good service at their local branch and you knew the people there and so on. Today, if you're picking a brand, it's probably a lot about like their web UI and their mobile app and how you can interact with them digitally, right? And that's kind of the broad move, like the broad motion, where for most companies, like the primary touch point with their customers is often the digital experiences they build. And I think when it comes to digital experiences on the web, for a long time, there was an idea that you would buy some off-the-shelf platform that would kind of give you that digital experience and allow you to customize it. And I think the more important this becomes as like your main gateway to interacting with all your customers, the more it also becomes clear that if you buy some off-the-shelf experience, you come across as like some off-the-shelf experience, right? Like, you can't really tailor the customer experience to what your company is about and what your brand is about and how you want those interactions to feel and so on. So there's more and more motion to say like, okay, we need the capability to build customer experiences for our customers rather than just buy them off the shelf. But then at the same time, you don't want to build all of that. Like, you don't want to build all the repeatable stuff that's the same from your business to any other business, right? Like, you don't want to build the content infrastructure that a company needs. You don't want to build the e-commerce functionality that you need to be able to charge people or keep inventory, or you don't want to build your own search functionality. You don't want it, like, all of these components you really don't want your developers to spend time on. So companies are looking for a way to get developers to craft how they interact with their customers online, but being able to focus their time just on that and not all the other stuff around it, right? Like, and I think that's the core of this idea of composable architectures, that you can buy the different components off the shelf, but you can build the experience around them. You can build like the customer interactions around it. And that's really been our vision, right? To say like, if you can decouple the experience layer from all these different components and so on, then we can sort of give a best in class platform to let the developers that are building the experiences just focus on essentially writing the code and not doing the DevOps and the release management and the scaling and the infrastructure and the hosting and the observability, but really just like building the right experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. And so to me, there's two parts of what you just said. I mean, one is, you know, definitely there's this need for brands to be responsive to just customer demands for, you know, they want a customized and a personalized experience, and they appreciate the differentiation that a brand would have, you know, one brand versus another. If they're all using the same e-commerce platform, then what's the difference in the mind of the consumer? The other part of what I'm hearing you say, and, you know, what I wanted to talk about a little bit more is just, you know, building all of those pieces from scratch. I mean, you know, part of the current pain points with some of these more monolithic systems are things like technical debt and inflexibility and all of that. And, you know, if you counter that with building everything yourselves, you kind of run into it's a different side of the same coin almost, right? So it's like, you know, even though a lot of people listening to this are not, you know, are more in the marketing and the CX side of the business than in the technology part, they're dealing with technical debt You know, whether you know it or not, you're probably in, if you work in a large organization, you're dealing with some kind of technical debt now. You know, what for those that may be less familiar with that as a concept, you know, what are some of the pain points that, you know, technical debt, inflexible legacy systems, monolithic architectures, you know, how might these things exhibit themselves for those that may not be, you know, really familiar with the origins?
I mean, at the end, the key way they exhibit themselves is that when you're a marketeer or a merchant or brand manager and you want to get something done, you ask your developers and you get a timeline for it that seems very slow, and then your developers are still not even able to hit that timeline, right?
Yeah.
And often it comes down to a lot of different things. Like there's sort of two big causes of it. I think one have been that sometimes you get big DXP systems sold into the business stakeholders with a promise of like, you basically don't need the developers, you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
And then when they start actually using them, they start realizing, wait, we can do some things ourselves, but as soon as we do anything really interesting and launch any interesting campaign or something, now we need developers. But now our system was not actually built for developers to really come in and work with it well. So now the developers can't really, like, we can't do everything ourselves like we were promised, but now our developers can't do what they're supposed to do either, right? So that's one root of it. The other route is just like any large company that has been around for a long time, right? Like, and they'll have a lot of different sources where their content, where their product information, where their brand information, where their digital assets live. Some of them, because they've picked a tool in the past and then it's become ingrained in all the workflows and so on. Some of them because they've gone and acquired other companies that had their own different set of toolings and so on, right? Like, so I think there's just an inherent reality where you end up with a lot of complexity in those systems, and where getting away from that complexity is hard also because it spans both the developers that have to work with it, but also all the people that are used to using those systems, right? Like used to inputting information in a specific place and in a specific system. So to get it right away from it, like, I think there's two key pieces that companies have to get right to be able to move faster. One of them is what we've talked about since the beginning of Netlify, which is really like, can you take the actual like user experience layer, that digital experience you're building, and sort of decouple it from all of those different content sources, all this different business logic and so on, and allow teams to build and iterate on that experience in isolation. We've seen that when companies do that, they can start iterating much faster on the actual like visual UI that's in front of users, right? Like often when I talk to a lot of large companies and ask them like, how often do your web team release changes to production? I'll hear answers ranging from, in some cases, once a week, more frequently, like we have like a release window every 2 weeks. In some cases, I'm hearing quarterly releases and so on. When you look at the customer base on Netlify, just the enterprise customer base, we can see from our analytics that they release changes to production 140 times a week. And one of the keys to that is this idea of like decoupling that web experience layer from all this really complex data and business logic and data migrations and legacy systems, and allow teams to iterate there. Now, you still typically need some way then to make your content and your product information and all of the data that actually like needs to be presented to your customer in some digital experience, you still need some way to allow your web teams to build with that and iterate with that, right? Like,
yeah.
So that's where I think you more and more need some sort of your data orchestration, where you have like a coherent way to get data from a lot of different sources, where some might be modern and headless and some might be not so modern and not so headless, to get those into the same place and allow developers to build with it. We've integrated that into our platform as Netlify Connect, but I see it as a much broader like industry trend where when you think about what is the architecture you need to be able to move at the speed that your business requires and will require even more in the future, you need some orchestration layer that makes it easy to get to the right data. And then you need some way to quickly iterate on different UIs on top of that, that's not tied to the underlying systems.
And so for those that are listening and, you know, kind of you touched on some of the pain points that this composable approach alleviates. To move in this direction, it requires making a business case and, you know, having some tangible business benefits to kind of illustrate what this is going to bring. I know you kind of touched on some of these, but maybe just elaborate on that a little bit. Is, you know, what, how would one make the case with business benefits and, you know, to do this now?
I mean, there's a short-term case and a longer-term case, right? Like, I think short-term, it's really all about faster time to market with faster iteration times that leads to higher conversions and more revenue, right? Like, that's a typical path we see in the short-term, right? Like, people need to be able to iterate faster on the customer experiences if they want to drive up conversions, if they want to drive up brand differentiation, if they want to drive growth, right?
Yeah.
So that's sort of the short-term case. I think there's like an even broader long-term case that I think will make this go from being something you should absolutely do now to being something you have to get done or you'll be in real trouble. And that's kind of the whole revolution that starting with generative AI, right? Like, where I think everybody is thinking about, okay, what's going to change with these large language models, like with this new opportunities from AI that can generate content and can reason and can do things we couldn't do before, right? Like, and one of the things like that's clear is that no one can know exactly where it will lead to. But everybody can agree that it will lead to acceleration, right? Like, no one would say this is going to make things slower. It's definitely going to make it faster to produce more content, more assets, more code, more experiences. And if you have like, if you massively up the cadence of all of those and you're still on like a release window where you can do a release every 2 weeks or every quarter, you're just not going to be able to keep up.
Yeah.
But the even broader thing I think will happen because of the AI revolution is really what you could call UI 2.0, right? Like, where every user interface we've built since the first computers was based on this constraint that computers need precise instructions to do anything. And that constraint kind of just went away with large language models, right? Like, suddenly a computer can figure out what you want. And I think right now we're still building the same types of user interfaces that we've been building forever, but we're starting to build them faster. But I think over the next 5 years or so, we're going to see whole new types of user interfaces, whole new types of devices and forms of interaction with computers that we haven't seen before. And again, similar as with AI, no one right now can predict exactly what those are going to look like or how they're going to work or where we're going to end up. But what I can predict is that there'll be constant change, and it'll be like as big a change as the change to mobile, and probably even like much, much bigger, right? Like, so again, if you're not architecting now for being able to iterate fast and keeping up with that change, in the next 5 years, you'll run a risk, like a real risk of just being run over by the changes that's happening. And you definitely can't just buy some big off-the-shelf software in the box that will keep you up with all of that.
Yeah, I know the report I mentioned, the Netlify report I mentioned at the top of the show, you know, mentioned 80% of developers that have integrated AI into their workflow are quickly reaping benefits. So, you know, certainly that, to your point about, we certainly talk, you know, it's hard to avoid the topic of AI and to some degree on this show. So I think we've mentioned, you know, something or talked about it on pretty much every show this year, but, you know, certainly this, it has an impact here. And, you know, so what I'm wondering as well, though, is, you know, you've talked a bit about, you know, what it looks like and what some of the business benefits are. You know, can we talk a little bit now about, you know, what is moving towards composability look like? You know, again, I, you know, my experience, I've worked with some small companies, but I mainly work with large orgs that are, you know, there's a lot of, they don't have one monolithic system in place. They have five and, you know, there's lots of legacy. Some of it's homegrown and some of, you know, lots of it's off the shelf and, and there's, you know, there's all kinds of things going on, in other words. So, you know, what, I assume it's not an all at once kind of move because, you know, at least, especially large orgs don't function that way. But, you know, what does it look like to move towards composability in the enterprise?
Yeah, of course, you just go in and turn off the old system and put the new one in place. And and you're all set, right? No, of course, I think there's like such a big difference between sort of the early adopter market, the greenfield project, right? Like where it's all just like you pick your headless content and commerce infrastructure and some modern front-end framework and you just start building and that's it, right? Like in the larger scale, I think it's of course really important that you can make this a long-term evolution of your architecture in a pretty pragmatic way, right? So the way we really help companies do this and what I think, like, well, if we involve the companies that are trying to build this themselves, they kind of need all of these pieces, which is why we've put them together in one platform, right? I think you need to expect, as you said, that you have several different existing monolithic systems that you can't just remove, right? Like you have to make a plan to gradually be able to build on top of them and modernize the parts that matters the most. So We launched this year our Netlify Connect product line that really allows you to define how do you get content out of those systems and into a central GraphQL API where your developers can build experiences with the content from any of those systems, regardless of how those systems works and where they sit and who controls them. And then alongside with that, you can start introducing modern headless systems that are easy for the developers to build with, right? Like, so that's kind of a foundation of figuring out how are you going to make the content and products and data that is already sitting in your existing systems available for a modern composable workflow, right? Then the next step, of course, is ideally to start gradually migrating from the front end being part of your monolith to decoupling that web experience layer into its own. And again, when we work with customers, it's typically not about doing that in one big rewrite of everything, right? Like everyone wants to avoid those. It's typically targeting as a specific app or a specific part of your site. In some cases, we've had like people start with their corporate site, but like the homepage plus like 10 key pages that are the most important. Then they've put Netlify in front of the existing like monolithic web architecture, just essentially acting as a CDN there. And then they start deploying those key pages onto Netlify and start iterating there, right? Like, so that gives you like the starting point where now suddenly on the pieces of your properties that matters the most, you're getting that speed of iteration, you're able to build more modern experiences and you can move faster. And then you can gradually extend that to a larger and larger part of the whole experience. And then the third thing we've worked on solving is that obviously one challenge with this is the experience for the non-developers, right? Like you do these two things and suddenly you've enabled your development team to move at a much, much faster pace than they could before and to pick the right tools so they can build like any kind of experience you want from them rather than being constrained by whatever template engine the existing monolith comes with. But for the business stakeholders, you might now lack the ability to actually like go to a website and know where should I get, like I'm seeing something that I want to make a change to,
right?
Update this page, but where does this content even live, right? Like is it in our legacy system or is it in the modern headless CMS we just implemented, and how do I go about editing it, and you risk ending up in like ticket vortex land where every one of those changes becomes a ticket to the development team and you have to wait to get to it, right? Like, so there, I think you really start needing a sort of visual orchestration layer. And we again launched this as Netlify Create as part of our platform. But again, from the vision that I think everybody kind of starts needing to solve for this, right? Like when you have this problem, because you need some visual orchestration layer where a marketeer or a merchant can go straight to the page, click edit and edit straight from there or go from there to wherever the content lives without having to know in advance how is this page constructed of different pieces, right? Like you need the software to be able to manage that complexity for you.
So, I mean, it sounds to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, you know, the Netlify platform, because I do want to talk a little bit specifically about that. It's kind of like, it sounds like it's kind of the glue that ties a lot of this stuff together. Is that maybe, I know you touched on a lot of aspects of it, but maybe just talk a little bit about, you know, when an organization, you know, buys Netlify, you know, what exactly are they getting and how does that interact with maybe some of the other composable services or even legacy platforms?
Yeah. I think the glue is a pretty good way of describing it, right? Like, I mean, we both take care of sort of the whole workflow for both the developers and the non-developers, and then the actual like web infrastructure for edge hosting, for serverless compute, and so on, right? Like, and it really is about like we are not any of the components, right? Like, so we don't have an opinion on what CMS you should use, what should you use for content management, what e-commerce platform should you be using, what front-end framework should you be using, what search engine should you be using, right? Like we just really want to give you like the core composable web platform that lets you easily add or remove or evolve any of those components, that lets you easily get to the content, products, and data that sits in your like legacy monolithic infrastructure and make it available in the same way as the modern headless content, that allows your developers to iterate fast, integrate with like, again, as a glue layer between their platforms they use to manage their source code, whether it's GitHub or GitLab or Bitbucket or the like, and just tap into their workflow there. We glue together that workflow with whatever project management tool you're using, whether it's Jira or Linear or the like, to really just like streamline all these different orchestration points and touch points between developers and non-developers, between your UI and all the different components, and allow your team to really focus on building and shipping and not having to do all the other stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Matt, thanks so much for joining. It's been great talking with you. I have one last question before we wrap up here. You've given a lot of great insights on composable and a lot of great advice already. What's one next best action that you'd recommend for those listening that, you know, maybe they want to explore a composable approach, see if it's right for them? What do you recommend that they do?
I mean, the obvious recommendation would be come talk to us, right? Like this is kind of our bread and butter, right? Like to help large companies embark on this composable journey with success and without the massive risk. If you're already sort of starting on this, just go take a look at our at our platform and see how our components match to how you're thinking about this. And ideally come talk to us, right? Like we're really here to help with that. Avoid making it a massive rewrite project with a big launch date long term out in the future, and find instead a way to make it like a small agile starting point where you can pick something really important and get it live really fast and get to that speed of 140 releases every week, and then start expanding from there.
Yeah, that's great. Well, again, I'd like to thank Matt Bielman, CEO at Netlify, for joining the show. You can learn more about Matt and Netlify and get a copy of the State of Web Development report by following the links in the show notes. Thanks again for listening to The Agile Brand, brought to you by Tech Systems. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.gregkilstrom.com. That's GregKilstrom.com. While you're there, check out my series of best-selling Agile Brand Guides, covering a wide variety of marketing technology topics, or you can search for Greg Kilstrom on Amazon. The Agile Brand is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content. Until next time, stay agile.
The Agile Brand.